You're listening to Cincinnati Edition, where it's time to go on the money with Chris DeSimeo and his guest Peter Z. Grossman.
The energy markets continue to grab quite a bit of attention. It is at the core of our economy, and it's a pleasure to welcome to the show Peter Grossman, a PhD and a professor, actually. He's the Clarence F. Frimson Professor of Economics at Butler University in Indiana. His undergrad degrees and a master's from Columbia University and his doctorate from Washington University in St. Louis. And his latest book, he has now six books, which he has written, U.S. Energy Policy and the Pursuit of Failure. Fascinating reading. And Peter Grossman, thanks so much for taking part of your weekend to be with us here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Peter, you get right to the point in the book talking about the an acronym that really I'd kind of forgotten about, the MFEE, the Magnetic Fusion and Engineering Act of 1980. Tell us what, remind us, please, what that was all about and what lessons should we be learning from that adventure, shall we call it?
Well, in 1980, of course, we had just come through what was the most dramatic and difficult of our energy crises, and long lines at gas pumps and so on, and a belief also that we were rapidly running out of oil and gas, and America would soon have dry taps and dry wells all across the nation. And so there was this a great effort to provide some kinds of answers, solutions to our energy problems. And the MFEE was going to be the long-term solution. It was going to solve all energy problems once and for all. Because if you had fusion and electricity, fusion-generated electricity, you had enough fuel for literally billions of years. So what Congress did was it took upon itself the responsibility and great joy of projecting that the U.S. would do this by the year 2001 and that we would therefore have this because we passed the legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was incredibly idiotic. Legislation, you can't legislate scientific and technological breakthroughs. That, in fact, within a couple of years, was very clear that this had no chance to be fulfilled. But at the time that it was passed, everybody in Congress was just congratulating each other.
Yes.
On what Jim Wright called the essentially the most important development since the discovery of fire.
And electric power, he also
compared. Oh, yes, and electric power. And so Congress was essentially putting itself in some kind of pantheon of great scientific achievement. And what, in fact, it showed was that Congress was grasping at anything, any answer, to solve what was a very serious political problem for everybody in Congress, a much more serious political problem than there actually was an energy problem.
Yeah.
The energy problem had been caused largely by bad policies in the U.S. and was at the time the MFEE passed, the energy crisis was over, and in fact, a glut of oil had developed on world markets, and the price was coming down
drastically. Why is it, Peter, that we seem to careen here in the United States from a crisis du jour, and have been looking for quick fixes as opposed to systematic, long-term, rational plans to address our energy needs?
Well, what happens generally in the context of a crisis is that we suddenly get what I call the do-something dilemma with respect to the policymakers in government. They are suddenly confronted with something that makes people in the U.S. very uncomfortable, makes constituents uncomfortable, and they demand that Congress solve it.
Do something.
And so they come up with a solution that has a great deal of political appeal, but is essentially impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And the political appeal is this. The members of Congress promise some kind of energy independence, and we're going to be able to do it with all American energy supply that will also be very inexpensive. And these promises are, for have a lot of political appeal, but they go nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the political appeal, every time there's a crisis, we come back to the same answers. And every time we have go back to the same answers, we actually accomplish nothing.
Right. I'm reminded 30 years ago there were ethanol plants springing up in Indiana. And, of course, it returned. And it seems as if every one of these alternative solutions brings with it its own set of problems, which you detail in your book, U.S. Energy Policy and the Pursuit of Failure. Between fusion, wind, solar, switchgrass, algae, do any of these hold out any hope for energy independence for the United States?
Well, first of all, energy independence is a very slippery term. I mean, it's used constantly. In the last 12 years in Congress, it's been uttered almost 2,500 times by members from both parties. But if you really look at what people mean by energy independence, you'll find it means different things to different people. Now, will some of these technologies hold out the promise of providing some of our energy in the future? Probably, I would have to say. But it's not going to happen because a government makes a plan and sets a timetable. President Obama said that by 2015 we'd have 1 million electric cars on the road. Well, unless he plans to put them out there himself or give 1 million cars away, it's just not going to happen. And it's not going to happen because, in fact, even with incentives, you don't cause commercial products to be successful just by giving them incentives.
Yes.
So, I believe the average amount of time from an innovation to mass commercialization is something like 40 years. So whatever is invented with respect to some of these technologies, we can expect to see them perhaps 20, 30, 40 years from now.
Wow, that's a lot of election cycles contained in there. You know, Peter, in your book, and I love the title of it, Economic Policy and the Pursuit of Failure, I'm reminded of Pulitzer Prize-winning Barbara Tuchman's, one of her efforts, which did not win a Pulitzer, but she called it a book called The March of Folly, in which she described folly as governments actively pursuing policies that are contrary to their own self-interest, despite having been warned to the contrary. To what extent does the energy policy in the United States almost become a topic for Barbara Tuchman if she were still alive?
Well, that's an interesting question. My answer would be that there's really a split between what we can accomplish with energy and what politicians need from energy policy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know that politicians necessarily think they've failed with energy policy just because there isn't any that is useful if, in fact, it gets them reelected.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in a sense, we're following Barbara Tuchman's view of folly. But one of the things about energy policy is we get energy policy that fails, sometimes costs us a lot of money in the process. But actually, we're not doing too badly. We've muddled along for 40 years. Our economy has grown. We've had some ups and downs, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of thinking about energy policy was a lot of the time it has this almost catastrophic quality to it. As Gerald Ford said, it's discussions of energy seem to wind up talking about doomsday after a while. And we've done that, and Congress does it all the time. And then we get in our cars, drive home, and turn the lights on.
And talk and worry about doomsday.
And then we talk. And then when we're sitting around the table with the lights on and a hot meal in front of us, we talk about doomsday.
Yeah. Well, Peter Grossman, I want to thank you so much for taking time from your weekend to be with us. Your latest book, U.S. Energy Policy and the Pursuit of Failure, now available online and at your favorite bookseller. And I want to thank you again so much for being with us from Indiana.
Well, my pleasure, believe me.
From Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimeo on The Money.